Welcome to the Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate podcast, where we will discuss with industry experts on how to create wealth and build passive income from apartment buildings, self-storage, mobile home parks, and much more. Here is your host, Jonathan Way.
Welcome to the Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Way, and I'm the founder of Greystone Capital Group, my investment firm. If you're interested in passively investing with us, please visit greystonecapgroup.com and join our investor network. Okay, and now on to the show. Hey, Mason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jonathan. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Mason Moreland is a real estate investor and a wine grape vineyard developer, operator, responsible for growth, finance, and process improvement at Texas Wine Country. Mason's mission to find a niche ripe for disruption was complete when he found Texas Vineyards. While Texas had modest appetite for local grown wine, it was still using traditional labor-intensive growing techniques, and there was limited application of technology and methods for other growing regions. Just 4 years after his initial realization, TVC is now the top five largest Texas vineyard by acreage, accounting for 6% of total acreage in Texas. Wow, top 5% or five largest one. Wow, it's amazing. That's great, Mason. It's a great story.
Yeah, thanks. It's been feels like a long time coming, but now that it's, you know, you say it out loud, it's like, hey, 4 years, not that long, but it's a lot of work to get there. And there's been a whole lot of groundwork laid by a whole lot of people to get us to this point in Texas.
Yes. 4 years. I remember I was in New Jersey and moved now, but 4 years passed. So time seems goes really fast. So tell us, how did you, I know first you were into multifamily. Right. Could you just talk about that story, but a multifamily story first, and then the wine.
Yeah, sure. So, our background, I invest with my brother, my dad, my family. Our background was mostly in single family rentals. It was the classic, rich dad, poor dad. Oh, we got to, start building this portfolio and using leverage to get some cash flow to have some additional sources of income. And at a certain point, we got to where, this isn't going to scale, where most multifamily investors start out with getting into it. And we thought, hey, we need to get into multifamily, right? More doors in one place, get the efficiencies. Great. This is where we're going to go. So we had started down the path to do our first deal by ourselves, not syndicated or anything. And it was a really neat market. It was a small tertiary quaternary market in the Texas panhandle. It had some really good consistent industry that wasn't going away. But the thing we ran into was mostly that it's hard to bite off a deal like that by yourself, right? So we found it off market, got it under contract. And during our due diligence period, we got in there, and with my background on the side of contracting and things like that, I told the rest of the guys, I was like, guys, we're gonna either doze this place, or we're gonna put so much money into it to make this to where it meets our ethical standards, where these people are gonna live in it, that it's not gonna make us any money. This doesn't make sense for us to plow a bunch of cash into or plow it into the ground. So we backed out of that deal, and my first taste of multifamily was failure, right?
Yeah.
In a lot of senses, is good. I'm very glad of that experience, and I kind of recognize it would have been a boondoggle. Was this thirst to do something where we could both do something good and accretive to society and in the world. That's why I like real estate in general, is because it's accretive. It does people that's tangible. I was really drawn back to the land, and that was partially disillusionment, right? With multifamily after that, yeah. It's like, there's just no deals to be had. I didn't know what I was talking about. So I started looking in other places, and my background in wildlife biology and sort of agriculture type things really drawn back to the land, and started looking at vineyards as an investment by some of my friends.
Okay, great. Now, what gave you the light bulb moment that it was wine vineyard?
So yeah, that was like I said, I was really drawn back to the land, and this was over a couple of years actually that this kind of went through different stages in my heart and in my head, And after gotten some data from my friend that was working in the industry, you know, I'd done it a few times. And at this point I'd underwritten a bunch of different businesses and assets and felt comfortable doing that. I was like, guys, you are crazy. You know, like the overhead is nuts. And then you've got hail, frost, freeze, you know, fire, all these risks. Like this is nuts. I don't want to touch it. Left it alone. And I was sitting in bed actually after my first daughter was born. But after that, you know, you're trying to stay awake all the time. They're trying to eat every like 4 hours and watching just movie after movie, trying to stay awake. We watched, it was Goodyear, which briefs and nicely inherits this vineyard, doesn't really want it, finds out that somebody else that's there that isn't necessarily the heir does want it. It's really just about the life of living on a vineyard estate. And I was like, I got to figure out a way that there's got to be something missing here, right? So there's so many people in California and the West Coast that are doing so well at this. Mm-hmm. You've got the likes of Gallo and Constellation, the big majors, you know, they're the ExxonMobil and Royal Dutch Shell of, you know, of the wine industry. They're making money doing something. What are they doing? Can we copy any of that and tweak it and use it over here? And that's what me and Rusty and all of our other partners did is we went and looked at that and said, okay, what methods are they? Oh, what are we doing in Texas? And it turns out we're just 15, 20, 30 years in some cases behind the curve of the West Coast in both the technology and methods. So if we can apply those here and tweak them to adapt to our climate and our varietals of grapes, we can have a lot of success.
And how did you accelerate that growth for timeline? Because you're behind like 15, 20 years in the timeline scale.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the biggest issue I see with vineyards in Texas is the same issue you get with residential real estate, right? Scale. It's all about scale. If you can do a 15-door unit or you can do a 300-door unit and they're each in completely separate locations, which one are you going to do? You can do the 300 door one, right?
Yes,
all day, every
exactly.
day, because you're going to have so many efficiencies. And in Texas, just because of the way we've been operating, it's phenomenal in that it's bootstrapped. You know, it's a lot of people that are just, you know, a cotton farmer that's like, hey, I need to do something different. And they go out and learn this and, you know, do 5 acres here, 2 acres there and just bootstrap it up. Well, you get no efficiencies and you have to operate almost everything by hand. So what we did is we said, okay, let's apply what we know from real estate and finance to this, leverage people that know a whole lot more than we do and will ever hope to know with vineyards to go straight in at scale because not many people can go in and put in, you know, a half a square mile at a time of vines. You know, it's just very cost intensive. It's on the same scale as, you know, building apartment complexes. And what that allowed us to do is to cut the people out, right? Or cut the hands and the slowness of it out. So we're able to operate with machines doing the pruning, machines doing the spraying, machines doing the harvesting, machines doing basically everything after it's established. Whereas most vineyards in Texas are using hand labor, you know, on the scale maybe of 8 to 10 acres per person. We're running, you know, 320 with 2 people. So it's it's a big difference on the overhead. And we can also use that to push yield and quality up as well, just using modern methods.
Oh, okay. So you used automation with robots in essence to scale it larger and faster.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of having people out there with, you know, what amounts to glorified scissors doing pruning, we're using a tractor with one guy driving it, AI and GPS, you know, technology to do the pruning at 6 times the speed, you know, and we can spray significantly faster. You know, we get multi-row sprayers where we can spray fungicides and nutrients much quicker. You really do gain a lot at scale on something like this.
Okay. So that's so you use technology to help you in your advantage to do faster.
Yeah. That's the secret sauce is get as many people out of the way of the vines growing as you can and get things done as quickly and efficiently as possible.
Mm-hmm. So I guess how many can you actually, I guess, groom or grow those vines in a certain time period?
Maybe clarify a little bit. So are you talking about as far as like how many vines can we grow? Like how fast do they get to production?
Yes.
That's a good question. So that's the one of the major differences from what we were used to in residential real estate. You know, it takes 5 years for them to go from planting to full production.
Wow.
So you do get some production in years 3 and 4, but we'll actually purposely knock fruit off in those years so that we can basically force the plant to focus on growing just vegetatively. So growing more wood, becoming more sturdy so that as we push it hard in the future, we have a much longer lifetime on those vines, but it's about 5 years to get to full production. And then they have a lifespan of, it's sort of like an oil well, right? You have that time where you're prepping and you're drilling the oil well. And this is me coming from oil and gas background too, but you have that, all that time and expense. You're getting the oil lease, you're getting the drilling rig, you're getting the pad built, and you drill the well, and then you complete the well. And then finally it turns on, it ramps way up. And then you have this slow, nice, steady decline curve out to, for us, about 25 years. And then production starts to drop back off. And then that's when you start considering, you know, hey, do we replant? How are we going to freshen things up again?
Okay. Wow. That's very interesting. I didn't know about this cycle. So how would, I guess how would an investor wait? How long do you wait to get paid your distribution?
Yeah. The way I usually budget it is out in year 5, because I know for sure we will have production by then. You know, we're obviously going to try to crop some in years 3 and 4, but like I said, we're going to try to reduce that as well and make sure we're not overcropping them. Oh. So, you know, a typical payback period as far as a vineyard investment would be about 8 years to get back to return of capital. And there's different models that you can do it, just like with multifamily. You can buy and hold it, you know, indefinitely and get pretty good returns. You know, you're looking at your like 13 to 15% cash on cash annual with something like that. Or you can do other methods like refi it. Once you hit a nice consistent production, you can go and get a whole lot more value out of that.
Okay. Great. That's very interesting. You compare to multifamily, because I never, because it's hard to compare multifamily and wine vineyards. It's hard to like, it seems very drastically different.
That's
what's in my mind. It's like, how do you compare those? Like, you know, normally mine's typically a 5 year hold, you know, so multifamily, but okay.
Yeah, it's definitely more legacy. You know, you're talking like a 10 to 15 year hold on something like this. There's not as many people out there looking to buy a $30 million vineyard.
Yes. So it's a very capital intensive, because there's a significant amount of money that you need to create a vineyard, and you need a lot of land. That's what you need.
Yes. Luckily, we're abundant in land. But yeah.
Okay, great. So how's it going so far? You're in year one right now?
So we're in a few different stages. So the one of the families that we're partnered up with, they were the original pioneers and definitely in that camp of their bootstrapping it, just figuring it out and, you know, getting the right people in the right place to get it done. But they actually have the very first acreage of experimental planting in the trellising style that we use. So they had actually planted about 30 acres vines in our high wire system several years back. So they've just come into maturity in this last couple of years now. So we got our first good production out of them last year. We're expecting a nice crop this year out of them. And then they should level off this year and next year in their production. Next year, we're going to try to push them pretty hard just to see what they can do. But it was nice that we could learn a lot of through their experience with those of what to do, what not to do, what to plant, what not to plant in the system. So on the majority of our acres, we planted almost about 300 last year. So those are going into their second year this year. And then the remaining about 60 acres or so are between 3 and 6 years old.
And how would one, I don't know anything about how planting, you just take it and you plant to the ground, or how would you, is there a special way of doing it, or just plant to the ground?
Yeah, it depends on how you receive the vines. So you can actually get them in two different kinds. You can get basically what's like a potted plant. I mean, you call those green vines. So they, you know, they've got leaves on them and everything. They're in some soil, stick them in the dirt, you know, turn on your irrigation system and you're off to the races. The other way is to do dormant vines, which they're all grafted. That's a whole other story in and of itself, but they have a native grape root stock, kind of like fruit trees do, and then an actual fruiting top from wine grapes grafted on top of them. But they come as basically stick with roots. And those are actually really awesome to plant. They're really easy because you basically rip a furrow in the ground with your tractor. I've got a great video of Rusty's son just kind of dancing and throwing these little sticks in the ground as he goes on the tractor. But you just stick them root down right where your hash mark is or wherever the GPS says to stick the ground. And it has a couple of wheels that are big tires that are inverted that push that soil over the vine root. And then you turn on your irrigation system. A couple of later, you start seeing green leaves pop out.
Oh my God. Wow. Interesting.
It's really satisfying. Oh, it's really satisfying to see. Yeah. Okay. Right now we're at that point where we have plastic shelters around the younger vines. And what that does is it lets us just, without going out there and hand tying them to posts, it lets them get straight up to the top wire quickly and it protects them from wind. But it's really satisfying to see those little guys start popping out of those tubes with a bunch of green.
Oh, nice, nice. Awesome, man. Awesome. Interesting, interesting. Good. I'm learning about how you plant these little vines. It's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I'll send you a video of Rusty's son. It's pretty funny. It's good stuff. He was pretty happy after 200 acres of planting.
Done. Awesome. Awesome. Now, Rusty is your brother or your friend?
Rusty is one of our business partners. So he founded the first vineyard management company in the state of Texas. So they do custom vineyard management for other vineyard owners. And he's the guy that is the brains behind going out to California and figuring out what methods are they using there for the big guys and bringing those over and adapting them. So he was actually managing our other partner's vineyard and he's part of the reason why they had some of this, this high wire planting.
Okay, great. Good. So he's the kind of brains. He's kind of had the idea to pioneer how to do this.
He is the farming man. He is definitely the smartest man in the room when it comes to the grapes and everything. I'm just here for, dashing good looks and finance skills.
Yes. Awesome. Awesome. So great. So now you are hopefully get that successfully done. And then also in looking at your wines, hopefully you can reproduce that somewhere else in Texas, somewhere else later on.
Yeah. There's a big deficit. You know, we've got thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of traditional row crop land out here that we could convert into vineyards. And just between what the state of Texas produces in wine each year and what we produce in grapes, we've basically got to almost double the amount of production in the state to actually just satisfy what we produce and consume in the state. My whole goal is to cut off all those exports or the imports of West Coast fruit into the state. We don't need that. We can produce it. I want Texas to be a net exporter of wine and, raw materials for other states east of the Rockies to produce their wines. Because right now it all comes out of the West Coast. And I'd really much rather it be Texas grapes.
Yes. The Lone Star.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. We're great. So what advice would you give someone listening? What will you share from your experience?
I think the best advice I can give, and I've given this a million times before, but it is, don't stop. Like action is always going to trump planning. When I first started out at this, I cannot tell you how many times I was told you're crazy. This is never going to work. You're never going to get this done. This is never going to happen. You can't grow grapes in Texas. You know, one time we got all the way to the final loan committee approval for a loan on something in this industry. And one guy stood up and just railed on it. You cannot grow grapes in Texas, and just shut the whole thing down. I was like, you know, if you can just plow through the doubt, if you know it's going to work, if you have the numbers on your side, don't let that stop you. Because if you just continue to take action and when you hear that no, it's just give yourself a little bit of more motivation to go a little bit bigger, you know, get a little Grant Cardone blood going through your veins.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I totally agree, because the naysayers don't, when you can prove them and do like almost like Elon Musk, right? In the Tesla, you can't have an electric car. That's not possible. And he's proved everyone wrong. So you have to just follow your dreams, follow your heart, and the numbers work, everything works, and you just go for it. Great. Thank you, Mason, for sharing the story. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
Thanks for listening. For more information, you can find us online at www.graystonecapgroup.com. Check back weekly for new episodes. See you again next time.